This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording this week's show on Sunday, June 25th, 2023. Just to sort of drop into it, it's been 2 weeks since we've last done a show.
Jim said he was going to do shows during that time. I mean, this is all really...
I did. I mean, mind you, I got to do cool stuff when I wasn't recording the show. For example, I went to Kansas City, and I went to the site where the Thank You Walt Disney folks have been working on the restoration of the Laugh-O-Gram Studios. And I want to say the state of Kansas gave them a $2 million grant, and boy, they hit the ground running. They had construction folks in there stabilizing the building, because that was the initial concern, was the building was in such poor condition, just keeping the outside walls up was a challenge. But they've since done that, and there were folks in there readying, getting ready for the next phase of work. And the actual studio where Walt and Ub worked is up on the second floor in a building that was about to fall down. That gets a little interesting to try to, you know, you have to fix the bottom before you can get to the second floor. But it's a classic old brick building. It's a neighborhood that's in the middle of kind of being gentrified. I want to say 33rd Street. It's going to be really, really interesting a couple of years down the line to see both what the Thank You Walt Disney folks can do with this, because they want to have it as an education space as well as sort of a museum exhibit. And given that the very next day, Drew, we drove all the way out to Marceline and did the Walt Disney Hometown Museum, which they put in the Santa Fe train station that, you know, in fact, then the very nice little old lady who led Nancy and I around the building explained that when they went into that building, the roof had actually caved in. So they're the ones who brought that all the way back. So they should have plowed the road for what the folks in Kansas City are doing. But that was a great take in as well. But I got to Marceline. I got to Kansas City. You, on the other hand, you went to Rome, right?
Well, I went to Annecy, but then I was in Rome. Yes, yes.
Let's start with the obvious here. So I've been saying Annecy wrong for all of these years, right?
That's the French way to say it, is the Annecy. So I'm trying to be, you know, I'm trying to be.
Oh, cool. All right.
I'm native now, Jim. I've gone native, yeah.
Okay. Now, Drew is going to share all sorts of amazing things that he got to see at Annecy. And then likewise, you know, that little side trip, barely worth mentioning, going to Rome, hanging out with a certain Mr. Cruise, and being there for the world premiere of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. But again, we'll get to that on the second half of today's show. But first comes the news. And as always, the news portion of Fine Tuning is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestination.com. All right, so
should we say that ad again just because we've been gone for so long? Please book Storybook Destinations.
All right. 2 weeks of news. Let's hit the big parts, because I really want to get to the Annecy thing. And obviously, during this time, Elemental came out, and it was fascinating to watch the 1-2 punch of Flash making 59 and Elemental making, I want to say, 29.5. And people in the entertainment press using both of these as sort of an excuse to, you know, Pixar's lost its mojo and superhero movies are tired and people are turning their back on them. So what's your take on this?
Well, did you see it, Jim?
No. In fact, as I was driving back up from the Jersey just today, I was thinking that I really need to see Abby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. I haven't even seen Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse yet. I obviously need to see Pixar Elemental. And then, of course, this weekend we have Indiana Jones in the Dial of Destiny opening. And to show you what a terrible entertainment reporter I am, I still haven't seen The Little Mermaid yet. So I was thinking this weekend, I'm going to go to the movies all day.
Okay.
Sunday morning, got to go to my local cinema, and I'm just going to work it so I see all five of those movies. So by the next time you and I chat, I will have seen every piece of animation that's out in the market now. Likewise, I've seen the brand new indie, and I'll even, you know, have crammed in The Little Mermaid, so I can finally be conversational about that.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it. I can't believe you're going not on the cheapo Tuesday either.
Nope. So that'll be... I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I'm going on a Sunday with the masses. And in fact, I think what I'll do is deliberately make Indy the last film of the day, because I'm assuming Sunday night screening, I'll be able to get in. And all of the other stuff, especially given what they're saying about poor Abby Gilman. Did you see the projected box office?
All I saw was that they were looking at a single-digit opening, which is a shame because I really love this movie and I love Kirk a lot. He and I were hanging out, and I'll see. You know, it's just, I don't know. I really like this movie. I really love the aesthetic. I think that it will be something where when it's on Peacock in a few weeks, people will be like, where was this, you know, or whatever.
And that brings me to what's going on with Elemental. If you look at the audience scores, if you look at the majority of the reviews, this is a good Pixar film. I hate to bring this up because, again, the film that you wrote the wonderful making of book about, Onward, is the one that sort of started us down the road with this omelet. Onward was in theaters for what, a week, 10 days before everything shut down?
I think it was actually, like 6 days before.
Yeah. That was back when I was a good entertainment reporter, Drew. I actually went out on opening weekend and saw that.
Yes, you did. Yes.
And genuinely enjoyed it. But now, on the other side of Raya and the Last Dragon, likewise Luca and Turning Red.
And Soul.
All of these films that people have seen at home and enjoyed at their leisure, not worrying about, you know, the person next to them, whether they're wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, or if they're coughing, or if the kids are get behind them as being loud and kicking their chair. People like seeing the new Pixars at home now?
You know, I don't know. I think that is, to me, that's the major question involved with Elemental, which, you know, is not doing as poorly as they are making it out to be.
You know,
it almost was number one this weekend. It was kind of tussling with Spider-Verse for number one.
Yeah, all weekend long it was going back and forth. And in the end, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse came out on top with a $19.4 million take at the box office, whereas Elemental came in at 18.3. So $1.1 million separating those two at the box office in North America. And that only shows a fall off at the box office of 38%, which in a day when studios celebrate, oh, it only fell off by 60, woohoo, you know, get out the balloons and the champagne. A 38 is pretty cool.
It's great. It's great. And I think that, I think that Disney has trained audiences to expect the new Pixar movie on Disney Plus. And it's just like, We gotta break this programming.
But how do we do that? When you saw a Turning Red or Luca at home, you got to see this amazing film that, you know, immediately burned its way into your heart. People now know that in 6 to 8 weeks, an Abby Gilman is going to show up on Peacock. An Elemental is going to show up on Pixar. And they will get to discover these new animated films then, and then they will fall in love with these characters. But at the same time, it's important to remember what happened box office-wise with Super Mario Brothers. And this past week. Didn't that cross 500 million at the box office, I want to say? Hang on.
Domestic box office, I do believe, yeah. It's well okay. over a billion worldwide, so.
Oh, my mistake. It was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse that crossed 500 million worldwide.
Little Mermaid also crossed 500 million this weekend.
Oh, that's interesting, because yeah. they were talking about how that wasn't doing particularly well worldwide.
Well, it's not. I mean, they wanted it to be another billion-dollar grosser, so it's, yeah.
By the way, Drew is correct here. North American gross for that Illuminations film is $572 million, whereas overseas, holy cow, $757 million. So you're right. It's at $1.3 billion worldwide. So what do you then say to the Pixars and the DreamWorks of the world where it's like, you know, they will come out to the theaters for animation, but this kind of animation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's IP. I think the mm-hmm. big animation winners this year are going to be mm-hmm. Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. Mario, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
okay,
it's interesting. I think Elemental will have its day for sure. And you're right, it might be the day that it shows up on Disney Plus. Mm. But we can't discount what it's doing. And that hold is very admirable. And I can't wait to hear what you think of it, Jim. I've seen it twice now, so looking forward to chatting with you about it. Hopefully, next week, the week after. Yeah.
Okay, yes. My Sunday at the movies, where I come out bespeckled with juju beads from five films in a row. Just spitballing here for a sec. Okay, Super Mario Brothers movie for Illuminations, which is famous for, you know, they bring their movies in, for me, just kind of stunning price points. Between 75 and 90, right?
Yes.
Whereas Elemental, you know, the number that's being batted around is 200. What do you think is going to happen on the back of this?
Well, it's 200 because the movie was being worked on for 7 years and Pixar pays mm-hmm. people a living wage.
There we go.
Illumination farms out their material to a studio called MacGuff, which is in France, which they mm-hmm. own outright. So it's a mm-hmm. weird kind of vendor-client relationship. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see if there's more cuts at Pixar, but I feel like everybody I've talked to is very proud of the film, and yeah.
Same thing I'm hearing here. Allow me for a sec, though, to pivot to the other animation story that broke this week. I mean, face it, we were just talking about how well Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is doing. But at the same time, we also saw the story this week about the working conditions for the Sony Pictures animation film and, you know, the long hours and the work right up until the film basically, you know, was snatched out of the hands and thrown into theaters. Was the story that 100 people quit the production because of how tough the working conditions were? Because I have to admit, Amy Pascal, who I enjoy, but her, you know, wow, okay, you know, that well, if a film needs to be rendered again, a film needs to be rendered again. It's like, welcome to making a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some of that to it, right? I mean, like, you know, I think they place a lot of the blame on Phil Lord's hands, which I thought was a little odd, but mm-hmm. I don't want anybody to work themselves to death, but also, like, this is how these movies are made. I don't really know, you know. I don't know.
I'm sorry. That is somewhat ironic coming from what you and I were just talking about pre-show. You know,
yes.
Drew this week, what, five junkets?
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Okay. Yeah. We don't want anybody to work.
Listen. Yeah. I'm not saying I should be a role model. Maybe I'm too lax on working too much, but. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I think that they push them to the limits, maybe too far, but the resulting film is really an amazing achievement. So I don't know. I don't know what to say, Jim. What do you think?
It is such a strange time to be writing and talking about animation. Because, like, for example, Star Trek Prodigy. I'm sure you saw that story come down. Star Trek Prodigy was a very deliberate project. The notion, in fact, it was kind of that Disney cradle to grave thing. You know, the notion of where are the next generation of Star Wars fans going to come from? Well, they're kids. And, you know, that maybe we should do a show that's animated. And so with Star Trek Prodigy is we saw that it got renewed. And I remember during my week, you know, multi-weekly shopping trip to Target, seeing the physical one on the shelf. But following kind of Disney's lead, where they had shows on Disney Plus that they not only pulled down off the network, but basically delisted, right? And that's supposedly what's about to happen with Star Trek Prodigy. Now, mind you, the folks who work that side of the street already mounting Save Star Trek Prodigy campaigns. And as I understand it, the folks at Paramount Plus are potentially looking for another home for the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, saving an animated show is really difficult, as we've, I think, outlined before. But, you know, licensing the show to another network, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, because I think that's one of the things that the writers are kind of struggling with right now, is this idea of, you know, having royalties coming in. And if the studio that made the show or the movie is sort of hoarding the material, then your chance at more royalties are in fact encumbered. So if they would sell it to a fast channel or something else, that might actually be good for the people that made the show. So we'll see. I mean, I think the show is great.
I do as well. I will say this much. Somebody was reaching out to me and, you know, oh my God, you know, you got to help save Prodigy. And it's like, I said, hang on. You can remember, I'm old. I'm 64 years old. I was around when the first Star Trek got canceled, and you know, the one with Nimoy and Shatner. And it's kind of that story they tell about Elvis. Have I told you the story about the executive at RCA?
No.
All right. It's 1977. You know, the guy who's in charge of the RCA, at RCA in the Elvis account, is in his office in the morning. And suddenly the door to his office flies open and his secretary's in tears. And he said, like, Elvis is dead. And the guy, you know, first is shocked, then leans back in his chair and goes, good career move. You know, and it's just sort of like with Star Trek, getting canceled isn't necessarily a bad thing, folks. What's so funny is the very thing that's happening now, the Save Star Trek Prodigy, it happened the second season of Star Trek. That's what actually got the third season, that they made all this noise, and suddenly Desilu, you know, kind of backed down, and so did NBC. And all right, we'll do another season. I'm sorry.
Well, did you see that the first season Blu-ray set is sold out all over the place?
See, that's the other thing. All right. Tell me that someone at, you know, in Paramount Home Entertainment is going, guys, thank you for doing this, but,
you know, speaking of Home Entertainment, Jim, I've got something to show you. Look what I have.
Oh no. Is that the Steelbook?
This is the Strange World 4K, the Disney.
And you got movie this club. From the Movie Club edition. Okay.
Yes. So it exists in the world. Few of us have it, but here it is. So I just want to show you that, Jim.
All right. Well, that reminds me. I've been told if I go to Best Buy, I can. Well, tell you what. I'm out tomorrow running errands while Nancy's teaching water aerobics. I will. The next time we record, I will be able to hold up my.
Okay. Yes, I look forward to seeing it. I want to know that it's out there in the world. You know. So.
Same thing here. So we have talked about Elemental's box office. We have talked about how Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse bested at the box office this weekend. What are we missing here from animation?
Did we talk about the Elio trailer?
Oh, yes. And again, another one of these ones where it's like, oh, that's a charmer.
It looks cute. Yeah.
And we're going to show up for that one, right? Or...
Well, what's interesting about that, too, is that it's one of two Pixar movies releasing in 3 months of each other. So I believe that one is in April, and then we have May off, and then we have Inside Out 2 in June.
By the way, did you see the interview that Pete Docter did where he talked about for Toy Story 5, Woody and Buzz will be back together? So they are somehow undoing that ending that I loved for Toy Story 4.
Yeah, that's disappointing. I also really love that ending and think it's stupid that they're back together. But Whatever.
Whatever. Okay. Well, now, speaking of Annecy, when we get back from this break, Drew is going to share all sorts of news about all of the many, many, many shorts, TV series, and films that he saw during his trip to France.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, France. First of all, how was the trip?
The trip was good. It is a long trip. I think I went from LA to Washington, D.C., and then Washington, D.C. to Geneva. Mm-hmm. So it was about 18 hours, I would say, altogether. Not an easy trip. But, you know, it's great. I mean, you know, Jim, you've never been, right?
No. I have always followed Annecy from afar. So many great stories come out of it. It's the people who make animation sharing it with some of the most passionate, knowledgeable animation fans.
Yes, and also a lot of students, you know, a lot of people who are breaking into the industry. You know, I think we should say that the town in Beauty and the Beast is modeled after Annecy. That is the kind of vibe that this place has. It's kind of buttressed up against the French Alps, up against this amazing, gorgeous, huge lake. And it's a really charming, lovely place. So getting to be there was a real thrill. It was a kind of a dream come true.
Wow. Okay. But again, you've traveled 18 hours by plane. And you basically had to hit the ground running, right? I mean,
The first night I saw a work in progress screening of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem.
Ooh,
so
okay.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, but it was like, you get there, you got to pick up your badge, you got to make arrangements for your shuttle back to the airport at the end of the week, and then it was like, oh, and you've got to go to a screening, so get out there and start making it happen. So. It was great. It was the movie is amazing. I should say that. Everyone should be very excited. And Jeff Rowe, who you and I love from his work on Mitchells versus the Machines and Disenchanted and Gravity Falls, just knocks it out of the park. It's absolutely amazing. I loved it so much.
So that's our first night. We find where we're staying and we collapse. And then is it 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning and you're back in the saddle, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what did I tell you I saw the second day?
It wasn't Wish and Once Upon a Studio, right?
But I did see that. I mean, we can jump around. I mean, that was the last day. That was on Friday.
Okay.
That was really, really amazing. I mean, Once Upon a Studio is one of the most incredible things I think that Walt Disney Animation has ever done. Not to give anything away, but it takes place at the studio on a day where they're doing kind of a picture. They want everybody together, all the characters together for, you know, a 100-year celebration. Mm-hmm. So they got their over 500 characters in the short. Over 40 voice actors came back to reprise their roles. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
What I keep hearing it be compared to is sort of a night at the museum at Walt Disney Animation Studios in Burbank, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like that. It's the biggest compliment I can give it is that it doesn't feel like a corporate product. It feels like something that was actually made and crafted by people who love these characters and these properties, and it's pretty amazing that they pulled it off. It's it's just wonderful. It's really, really wonderful. It'll be attached to Wish, and I saw 25 minutes ish of Wish, so I've seen maybe a third of it, and I finally understand what it is, Jim. Mm-hmm. I get the whole wishing star thing. Mm-hmm. Chris Pine is great. I heard two songs.
Okay.
And yeah, there are some characters that are kind of stand-ins for the Seven Dwarfs, which is really fun.
Okay, without giving anything away, this is kind of the story that explains where a lot of the other stories come from. Would that be?
I don't know. I don't know if that's true, actually. I don't. What can we say about it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that might be an element of it.
Okay.
The star is a character. Mm-hmm. And so the star kind of like, that's why the goat is talking, because the star is kind of like mm-hmm. granting wishes and mm-hmm. things. Yeah, it's really beautiful. I think all animation fans are going to love it. And that style is really something else.
It sounds like a wonderful conceit. And this paired with, you know, Once Upon the Studio, you got to ask, is this going to be enough to make people come out to theaters?
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing amazing work by incredibly dedicated people, but I'm still seeing people, it's like, this is my couch. I like my couch. You know, and that movie will come to me. And that one actually, from what I've been hearing about the amazing background designs and that sort of thing that go all the way back to like Snow White and Pinocchio, this is something you need to see on a big screen.
Yeah, it's the first Disney animated movie. Mm-hmm. In CinemaScope since Sleeping Beauty.
Okay. All right.
Are you sold yet? Are you going to buy a ticket yet?
I'm buying 5 this Sunday. All right. I will be there. Okay. So continuing to hop around, you also got to hang out with the director of Abby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, which...
Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, yes.
Damn it. I keep doing it. Yes. Ruby Gilman.
Yeah, I loved it. There was a great presentation that featured that, as well as Trolls Band Together, which looks really, really fun. And the announcement that there is a new DreamWorks movie coming next year to Netflix, speaking of things you can watch on your couch, called Orion in the Dark, that's based on a Charlie Kaufman screenplay and looks really, really cool.
Charlie Kaufman? Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think this had kind of maybe been sitting around DreamWorks somewhere. Somebody pulled it out, said, let's do it.
Holy cow. Oh,
really fun
great.
Animation style. It was done by Mykonos Studio, which did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Captain Underpants. So really, really cool. The whole DreamWorks presentation was really great. You know, Trolls looks really fun. They go to a vacation kind of land that is inspired by Yacht Rock. So Christopher Cross will be on the soundtrack there.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Oh!
So that'll be really fun. You know, the other thing, Jim, I wanted to talk about was that I saw a work-in-progress kind of presentation on Spellbound, the Skydance animation feature that is coming next year.
No, hang on. That's news. All right, because wasn't that supposed to come out in November?
It was supposed to come out in November. It is not going to be ready for November. Okay. It is going to be out next year.
All right.
And it looks interesting. I am hopefully optimistic. It's about a young princess whose parents are turned into monsters, and she's got to figure out how to deal with this. And the animation looks great. Rachel Zegler is the princess.
We've been looking at this one piece of art.
Yes, those are her parents. That's the king and queen, yeah.
Okay, all right.
It's all coming into focus now, right?
There we go. All right.
Yeah, they showed the opening song, which is sort of, you know, it's an Alan Menken, Glenn Slater song, which I can't remember the last time those two worked together. So, you know, that's very exciting.
I want to say Home on the Range and Glenn worked with Alan on the lyrics for the stage version of Little Mermaid.
Okay.
Which had some good stuff in it, actually. And it kind of makes me crazy that a lot of the good stuff from the stage show didn't make it into the movie, which I haven't seen yet, which I'll do next Sunday during the five movie marathon. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it looks good. I mean, the opening song is sort of like about her dealing with her parents being monsters. It's fun. Okay. So I saw that, and then the big ticket item, Jim, was don't ask me how I stayed awake for this, but a 9 p.m. 2-hour presentation on Genndy Tartakovsky's Fixed.
And
it is hilarious. I think it's going to be very special. You know, the 2D animation by Renegade looks amazing.
Okay.
And it is raunchy. I know this is a kid's show, Jim, so we can't talk about things. But it is, it just looks, it's totally unhinged, but super well done with a lot of heart. And I cannot wait to see the rest of it. I saw about 20 minutes of it. And yeah, really, really great. And then the other thing that I saw 20 minutes of was a presentation by Illumination for Migration, which is coming out this Christmas, I believe.
So let's talk about that one, because I think you and I both mentioned that the first ad for this thing was kind of a non-starter. It was more of a, look at all these wonderful movies we've made, and we're making this one too.
Yes.
It was almost the equivalent of, look, trust me, okay? You know, just like, we made good movies. Come see this one too.
Yeah, it looks good. I think it looks like maybe the best Illumination movie ever.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, visually, it's very lush and very kind of painterly. Mm-hmm. And the story is really cute. It's about a dad who's, you know, he's got this family and they see all the other ducks migrating for the winter. And he's kind of like, he's uptight and just wants to stay at home. And so he, you know, the family convinces them to go out on this adventure. And so they're flying to Jamaica. And
this actually sounds like my weekend.
Yes. Okay. Except they didn't get waylaid in New Jersey for 70
They did not.
Hours.
No, there we go. There we go.
But apparently they do go to New York, and they showed this amazing footage of them kind of soaring through a fog-covered Manhattan that was really striking. And I think the visuals are really something special. They showed a scene where they kind of like go to this rickety shack that these storks are running in, and you know they've been told that storks want to eat ducks all the time, so there's this great kind of like sense of danger to the scene. And you know, it's directed by Benjamin Renner, who was a co-director on Ernest and Celestine, which is just
one of the most wonderful
animated movies, as you know, of the past few years. So
I
was very heartened. I haven't been this excited about an Illumination project in a while.
Have you seen any of the photos coming out of Universal Studios Florida? Because they're starting to walk out some of the stuff for Illumination Avenue.
No. Oh, Minion Avenue?
Or Minion Land, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah.
The Minion Cafe is open. The photo op set up, and they had the characters from Sing. But in one of the genuinely stranger things, somebody shared video of the Vector walk around and him bursting out and greeting all of his enthusiastic fans, which I think were two.
Vector is a villain from Despicable Me, right?
Yeah, it was kind of like, oh, that's kind of a deep cut this far.
Yeah, exactly. All those Illumination heads out there really got a kick out of that one.
No doubt. So anything else you want to share from your time at Annecy? Because we have news once we move to Rome.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk about Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget, which they showed footage of during the Netflix presentation.
Oh, okay.
Which looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And Sam Fell and Peter Lord were there, which was great. Okay. And the other thing I want to talk about is Win or Lose, the Pixar
series. Yeah, the for Disney Plus. And that's November, December this year, right?
December, And they showed Elemental, but before they showed Elemental, they showed an episode. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely amazing. I mean, I loved what I saw. It was just, stylistically, it was super bold and amazing and very cost conscious. Like, I recognized the house from Turning Red and some other assets that they had reused. But it's in a style all of its own. You know, it's like, when I did that Craig McCracken thing a couple weeks ago, which I encourage everyone to look up on YouTube, the whole thing is online and it's very
cool.
He talked about how his stylization is somewhat dictated by budget because, you know, the more stylized something is, the easier it is to draw. And I assume that's the same way with computer animation. And it's absolutely amazing. Yeah, I cannot wait to see the rest of it. And that'll be starting in December. On Disney Plus.
What did you think of the Up short? Carl's Date, I want to say it was called.
Oh, I loved it. I actually saw it at the Long Lead Day a few months ago and watched it again. I was at the premiere in L.A. at the Academy Museum, which was super fun. And yeah, I think that short is amazing. And I got to spend some time with Bob at the premiere Okay. He's just one of my favorite people. And I'm so thankful he's still at Pixar.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. we've lost a lot of...
Yeah.
They're not going anywhere, but they've moved on. So I'm very happy he's still there.
Same thing here. And it just not quite ready to let go of Edward Asner. So it was nice to get, you know, a little more.
Yeah, this was actually recorded only three months before he passed away. So quite possibly the last thing he did professionally ever.
That's an interesting thing. You go over to IMDb and it's like, nope. You know, still some other stuff coming. So, and speaking of stuff that's coming, we, of course, have Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which you got to go over to Rome and attend the world premiere after you finished the Odyssey. So what was it like to do that sort of thing?
It was great. Don't know when this episode of Fine Tuning is going up, but next week we will have a lot of things to talk about. But we've got a lot of great stuff coming your way. But, you know, it was good to see Tom and the rest of the cast, and the movie is great. Mm-hmm. So I saw it twice while we were in Rome, and I walked up and down the Spanish Steps a lot, Jim. So, you know.
Okay.
My buns were burning. Yeah.
Okay. Quick question, because again, obviously, we have a Dead Reckoning Part 1. Without giving anything away, how do we feel about how it sets up Part 2?
I mean, it's a pretty big cliffhanger, but I feel like there's a lot of resolution as well. There is not. It's not a Fast X scenario where it just ends in the middle of a scene. There is resolution. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2 is about 1,000 times more insane than Part 1. If that is even possible, I believe it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, we'll have some other big news to share with our next episode of Fine Tuning.
Yes. We'll talk all about it. Be on the lookout on Tuesday when this episode drops. Maybe go over to the social channels or my channel or something. You'll see what we've got planned for the next phase.
This is, of course, the wonderful Light the Fuse podcast that Drew does with his equally talented co-host, Charles Hood. Weren't you also saying you might have some Ninja Turtles?
Yeah.
Stuff? Okay.
Yeah, there might be some Ninja Turtle stuff coming up. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens, Jim. That's a good idea. I like that idea, Jim. We'll have to run with that. Yeah. Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt. That's my Instagram. And Light the Fuse Pod is the Twitter.
That's where you want to find him on social media. Likewise, for us on social media, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media. On Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. And once you're finished listening to this podcast, and then you go over and enjoy the latest episode of Light the Fuse, we got a couple other shows here you might want to check out. We got Disney Dish I do with Len Testa. We also have Marvelous Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams, who, by the way, has a show of his own called 32nd Street that's worth checking out. And then Brian Gunn and I recording a brand new Looking at Lucasfilm this Tuesday. And then after I get out and see Indiana Jones Dial of Destiny, we'll talk about that on that show too. Folks, if you could do Drew and I a favor, if you could head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend, well, again, not just the show you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but also Light the Fuse, that would be very helpful. And if you really, really, really like what you hear here, if you head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful for Mr. Taylor and myself. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back with a brand new Fine Tuning next week.